Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, August 8th, 2020. Visit MRT.com. Front page, education. MISD unveils Lee Renaming Committee by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. Midland ISD has its Citizens Renaming Committee to rename Robert E. Lee High School. The school board on Thursday voted to approve members of the committee that will recommend new names for Robert E. Lee High School and the Freshman High School. The district reports that the members of the committee will include MISD Executive Director of Athletics, Blake Felt, who will serve as the district co-chair, and Shannon Lowe, who will serve as public co-chair. The board also appointed two at-large members, Josh Sperry and Marydale Fryer. Others selected to participate in the renaming of the high school and freshman high school include Young Women Leadership Academy Principal Jennifer Siebert, teachers Bo Garza and Ellen Boyd, and two students whose names were not released. The trustee appointments are Shirley Howard and John Norman from District 1, Alfred Sanchez III and Stacy Martinez from District 2, Frank Maldonado and Ashley Borin from District 3, Rachel Stone and Steve Subia from District 4, Todd Brown and Valerie Tinker from District 5, Noble Kendrick and Monica Stroman Tucker from District 6, Roderick Strambler and Sarah Hale from District 7. The makeup of the committee fulfills a commitment Midland ISD Board President Rick Davis made in his July 26th article in the Reporter Telegram. I also believe the members of that committee should include persons who were either past Robert E. Lee High School graduates or parents of Lee graduates, Davis wrote. I think current students should also be included. I think it is important to ask all members to draw upon their memories and experiences and focus on what has made the school special so that the new name can reflect it going forward. The board voted July 27th to rename the high school. The committee will meet to discuss the submitted names and make at least one and no more than three recommendations to the superintendent. The superintendent will then present those recommendations to the board for final approval no later than October 19th. This is Kay reading a related story on page 2. Tyler picks new names, sort of, for high schools that honored Confederates Robert E. Lee, John Tyler, by Corbett Smith, Dallas Morning News. Robert E. Lee has surrendered once again. On Thursday, the school board of trustees in Tyler, located 90 miles east of Dallas, voted to change the names of both of its two high schools, which honored those who sided with and fought for the Confederacy. Tyler Lee High School will be renamed as Tyler Legacy, which won favor from trustees over another proposed option, Tyler Liberty. Tyler John Tyler High School, named after the town's namesake and the United States' 10th president, will be shortened to Tyler High. After his presidency, John Tyler, a Virginian slave owner, won election to serve in the Confederate House of Representatives shortly before his death in 1862. Trustees chose Tyler High over two other options, Tyler Heritage and Tyler United. Each name was selected on a 6-1 vote, with board member Patricia Nation voting against both changes. Nation argued that including Tyler in both school names went against the original intent of the process, and she held reservations of a possible backlash against the new names. The decision came after decades of requests from the town's black parents and students to change the names. Both schools got their namesakes in 1957 as a show of white supremacy by the Tyler School Board in the wake of efforts to integrate schools in the South following the landmark 1954 U.S. Supreme Court ruling of Brown v. Board of Education of Topeka. In mid-July, the district's trustees unanimously voted to start the renaming process. We should keep in mind that we're talking about changing names, not being creative about fixing inequalities, Board Member Aaron Martinez said during the July board meeting. Martinez put forth a motion to change the name of Tyler Lee in 2018, only to fail to get a second from another board member. The road that we have ahead of us is long, he said. Changing the name was right 50 years ago, it was right 2 years ago, and it's right today. Both schools will keep their mascots, the Legacy Red Raiders and the Tyler High Lions. Legacy and Tyler will compete in athletics and other extracurricular activities against Dallas area high schools in the upcoming school year. Tyler isn't the only district in the state making such a change. On July 27th, the Midland ISD Board of Trustees began the renaming process for one of its high schools, Midland Lee. Distributed by Tribune Content Agency. Energy. Hot weather fuels surge in natural gas prices. WTI remains above $41 as it stays in narrow price band. By Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. West Texas Intermediate eked out a small gain this week, remaining above $41 a barrel as it continues to be stuck in a narrow trading band. Natural gas prices, however, saw strong gains this week, starting with a 30-cent jump Monday that put it over $2.10 per MCF on the New York Mercantile Exchange. That was followed by a 9-cent gain Tuesday, then prices slumped lightly Wednesday and Thursday before gaining 7 cents Friday to close at $2.24 per MCF. That's well above the $1.80 MCF at last Friday's close. Quote, NYMEX Henry Hub posted substantial gains on August 3rd and 4th due to an easing of storage availability fears, excessive heat in June and July, and more of the same expected in August, and signs of strengthening LNG export demand, end quote. Midlander Mike Bunchbach, an oil, gas, and natural gas liquids marketing consultant, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. However, prices in the Permian were tempered by the rising basis between Waha and Henry Hub, resulting in a modest 15 cent per MMBTU gain in Waha prices for the fourth quarter, end quote. Bunchbach said that if crude prices creep up above $45 a barrel later in the year, prompting Permian producers to drill and complete wells, that will result in more natural gas associated with the crude production being put in the market, and that will put downward pressure on the Permian natural gas price. WTI on the NYMEX reported 3 days of gains this week, putting it above $42 a barrel Wednesday, before prices slumped the final 2 days of the week. WTI fell 73 cents to close at $41.22 per barrel Friday, up from $41.04 at Monday's close. The posted price ended the week at $37.75 a barrel. Bloomberg reported that crude prices were weakened by renewed tensions between the U.S. and China, which the news service said rattled markets already reeling from uncertainty over a new round of economic stimulus to help the economy through the COVID-19 pandemic. According to Bloomberg, crude is testing the upper bound of its recent trading range after hitting a 5-month high this week amid shrinking U.S. stockpiles. But taking the wind out of any sustained breakout rally is the spotty recovery in oil consumption, with crude imports into China shrinking in July. Roger Devon, Vice President, Financial Services at IHS Market, said in a market assessment that prices are emerging, quote, bruised and battered from the worst of the COVID-19 outbreak, end quote, and are now at a delicate point as prices transition to what his company calls phase two of its three phases of market recovery. The second phase is the just-in-time phase, in which surplus inventories are being worked down in parallel with rising supplies as spare supply capacity returns from the OPEC Plus alliance and North American producers. Quote, the record cuts set in motion in May and June by Saudi Arabia and its OPEC Plus partners played a pivotal role in accelerating the improbable rebalancing of global oil markets. With demand recovering from April lows and after giving markets an extra month to find their footing, these exporters have now moved from managing the immediate surplus of the crisis towards managing the recovery, end quote, Devon wrote in his assessment. The recent display of restored harmony among OPEC plus heavyweights Saudi Arabia and Russia illustrates that the strategic debate within the group over price levels and market share has time to run, end quote, he wrote. Quote, as long as prices hold in the current range, demand concerns will likely help keep the agreement on course. When prices surpass $50 a barrel, potentially lifting capital spending in the United States higher, that is when changes to the tenor of the discussion and the divergence of interest could start to play out, end quote. Rig count resumes decline by Miller McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. After a pause last week, the nation's rig count resumed its decline to record-setting lows, according to Baker Hughes' weekly rig count. The number of rigs at work in the U.S. fell 4 to 247 this week, the lowest since the Oilfield Service Company began tracking the rig count in the 1940s. The total is also 674 rigs below the 909 at work this time a year ago. The count has plunged over 60% since mid-March. This is the 13th record low the Baker Hughes rig count recorded this year, well below the previous low of 404 set during the downturn of 2014 through 2016. Texas reported 104 rigs operating in the state, unchanged from the previous week, but 350 rigs below the 454 tallied a year ago. The Lone Star State's western neighbor, New Mexico, laid down 3 rigs for a count of 46. New Mexico was the only one of the nation's producing states to report a decline in rigs. All others were unchanged. The Permian Basin, home to just under half the nation's operating rigs, dropped 2 rigs to 122 and is 322 rigs below last year's count of 444 rigs. Texas' Eagle Ford play dropped 1 rig to 11 rigs in operation. Eddy County, New Mexico, remained the most active county in the Permian Basin, with 26 rigs at work, down 2 from the previous week. Lee County, New Mexico, followed with 20 rigs, down 1 for the week. Martin County posted the sharpest increase in rig activity this week, adding 5 rigs to put 18 at work within county lines. Loving County reported 13 active rigs, unchanged from a week ago. Midland County lost 1 rig to 12. Borden, Glasscock, and Ward counties each saw renewed activity this week, with 1 rig at work within each county. This is Kay, back to page 1. Food truck battle. Food trucks gather May 1st in the parking lot of Haverty's. A food truck battle is scheduled to be held August 23rd. Tim Fisher, Reporter Telegram. Food small bites. Small bites. Food truck battle set. Miss Lynn's is now Pizza Place. By J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis at hearstnp.com. Small Bites serves up news about area restaurants and food trends. Have a picture or a tip? send it to jlewis@mrt.com. Free Burger. Whataburger is celebrating its 70th birthday by giving away one free burger. mrt.com/news/article/whataburger-giving-away-freeburgers-in-1545-7825.php when people purchase a burger through the app. The promotion runs through today. The burger chain also rolled out a brand new food truck, https://www.mrt.com/life/article/whataburger-unveils-new-food-truck-going-on-a-1546-5004.php, which will be going on a multi-state tour starting next year. Taco of the Month. Torchy's Tacos Taco of the Month is the Bottle Rocket Shrimp. TorchysTacos.com. The taco features habanero battered fried shrimp, cabbage slaw, cotija cheese, candied jalapenos, cilantro, and Diablo mayo served on a flour tortilla. New beer. Eccentric Brewing Company is now canning West Texas Gold. Facebook.com/Eccentric Brewing Co. Tall City Brewing Company released a new beer named West Texican. Facebook.com/TallCityBrewing/photos/a.verylongstringofnumbers. The beer is a Mexican/Vienna lager that's light with malty and biscuit notes. Opening soon, Miss Lynn's. Facebook.com/Miss-Lynn's, L-Y-N-N-E-S, which was once a bakery, is now serving up Neapolitan-style pizza. The revamped takeout restaurant announced the pivot away from pastries to serving pizzas and paninis. The restaurant, at 3323 North Midland Drive, is having a soft opening today with this menu. Facebook.com/Miss Lynn's/photos/a.verylongstringofnumbers. The restaurant makes all sauces and original crust from scratch, as well as offering gluten-free cauliflower crust. Just announced, the 2020 Permian Basin Food Truck Battle, facebook.com/events/3161-7846-5060-1809, has been set for August 23rd. The event will be at the Destination Midland, where local food trucks will battle and be judged based on food categories. Attendees can purchase food from their favorite vendor while enjoying live music, cornhole games, and family fun. Raising Cane's is coming to Odessa. The chain has posted a position for a general manager. managementcareers-raisingcanes.icims.com/jobs/21727/general-manager/job?mobile and a very long extension on its website. The job posting tags East 42nd Street and Wendover Avenue, which is by Wynwood Town Center. Raising Cane's opened its Midland location, https://www.mrt.com/entertainment/restaurants-bars/article/opening-day-crowds-lift-up-raising-cane-s-1503-0273.php in February. Bean and Grape has expanded its hours. The restaurant will be open longer on Saturdays for dinner and drinks until 9 p.m. The new hours of operation are Tuesday through Friday from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m., Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. This is Kay, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, August 8th, 2020, local and state. City reports 22 new cases, the lowest in weeks. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HEARSTNP.com. The Midland Health Department reported 22 new coronavirus cases Friday, the lowest number of cases since at least mid-June. The Health Department's report is a change during the spike of cases that is currently taking place inside Midland County. On Tuesday through Thursday, the Health Department reported an average of 69 cases. The 22 new cases Friday was less than one-third of that average earlier in the week. Today's new cases are reflective of lab results from August 2nd, according to the City of Midland. While the number of cases dropped, the city also reported two more Midland County residents died of coronavirus-related issues during the last 7 days. One was a female in her 60s. She was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital and died Thursday. The city also reported that a male in his 60s died August 1st at Odessa Regional Medical Center. Both people had underlying conditions. The coronavirus-related deaths are the 5th and 6th reported this month, the 22nd and 23rd in less than 3 weeks, and the 32nd and 33rd involving a Midland County resident since the beginning of July. The total number of COVID-19-related deaths during the pandemic is 48. The overall number of cases through Friday is just short of 2,600. That includes 1,331 who are reported to have recovered, an increase of 5 compared to Thursday, and 803 isolated cases. Coronavirus report, cases Monday, 184, cases Tuesday, 61, cases Wednesday, 69, cases Thursday, 78, cases Friday, 22, total this week, 414. Total during pandemic, 2,592. Patient admission numbers at Odessa hospitals go down, by J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis at HEARSTNP.com. Medical Center Hospital has watched coronavirus patient admittance decrease and will be combing the 7 central and 8 central coronavirus floors to conserve resources as long as the numbers continue to decrease. Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said that during the last couple of weeks, the hospital has been seeing a decrease in COVID-19 patient admissions. Odessa Regional Medical Center CEO and President Stacy Brown said coronavirus admittance numbers at ORMC are also down from what they were at the end of June and early July. She said the ventilator numbers have also decreased. The ventilator numbers are down to half of that, which is also good because it tells us the patients that are in-house aren't as sick as they were before, Brown said. We are seeing very similar trends. Coronavirus stats. Medical Center Hospital, 1,157 positive tests, 24 patients in-house, 4 patients on 7 Central, 10 patients on 8 Central, 10 patients in CCU with 6 on ventilators. Patient list includes 1 from Siena Nursing and Rehabilitation, 1 from Deering Nursing Home, 1 from Andrews, 1 from Monahans, 1 from Stanton, 2 from Pecos, 1 from Fort Stockton. 4,173 negative tests, 28 pending tests. Source, MCH. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 353 positive tests, 9 pending tests, 11 patients with 4 on ventilators. Patient lists includes 1 from Andrews and 3 from Big Spring. 2,057 tests taken. Source, ORMC. Ector County. 854 active cases, 54 deaths, 2,604 recovered cases, 3,512 total confirmed cases. Source, ECHD. Weather forecast for Saturday, August 8th, 2020. high 98, low 74. Conditions, sunny during the day, clear at night. Winds, 10 to 20 miles per hour, with gusts around 25 miles per hour at night. Chance of rain, none. Sunrise, 7:09 a.m. Sunset, 8:39 p.m. Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, August 8th, 2020. Energy. Midland gas average again falls below $2 by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HEARSTNP.com. The average price of gas in Midland dropped 5 cents week over week, according to AAA Texas. That decline was 3 cents more than Odessa, greater than the state average, and good enough to drop the average in Midland below $2 a gallon. AAA Texas reported this week that the average in Midland fell to $1.99, which for the fourth straight week was the third highest in the state. El Paso led all 27 larger metropolitan areas surveyed with an average of $2.06, while the average in Odessa fell to $2.04. The state average dropped 4 cents to $1.85. 14 cents lower than the average in Midland. Texans are filling up with the cheapest gas since the end of June, according to AAA Texas, which also reported that the downward trend is likely to continue as gasoline demand dropped across the country week over week by about 2% and regional gas supplies increased by nearly 1%. Historically, gas prices in Texas tend to fluctuate during August, and drivers will likely see some fluctuation this month as well, stated AAA Texas spokesman Daniel Armbruster in an online news report. However, prices likely won't spike due to continued COVID-19 concerns and lower demand for gasoline. Across the region, the following averages were reported. $1.74 in Amarillo, a decrease of 2 cents. $1.78 in Lubbock, a decrease of 6 cents. $1.84 in San Angelo, a decrease of 3 cents. And $1.80 in Abilene, a decrease of 6 cents. The lowest average in the state was in Amarillo. Distributors have told the Reporter Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. Drivers in Midland are paying 64 cents less than during the same time last year. The average across the state is down 59 cents year over year. Source, AAA Texas. Price of oil. $41.22, down 73 cents. Photo. Residents at Ashton Medical Lodge are treated to a graduation-themed parade May 28th. Residents came outside and either spaced themselves along the sidewalk or in parking spaces as family members and friends drove around the facility, honking horns and waving. For the first time in nearly 5 months, visitors will be allowed in Texas nursing homes on a limited basis. Tim Fisher, Reporter Telegram. Visitors to be allowed in nursing homes on limited basis by Sarah R. Champagne and Emma Platoff, Texas Tribune. For the first time in nearly 5 months, visitors will be allowed in Texas nursing homes on a limited basis, state health officials announced Thursday evening, reversing a policy intended to keep the state's most vulnerable populations safe from a pandemic that has proved especially deadly for older people. Residents of Texas long-term care facilities have been separated from their family and friends for more than 140 days since Governor Greg Abbott shut down visitation in mid-March. At long-term care facilities, some indoor visits will be permitted, providing there are plexiglass barriers, there are no active cases of the novel coronavirus among residents, and there are no confirmed cases among staff in the last 2 weeks. physical contact between residents and visitors will not be permitted, state officials said. The restrictions are tighter on nursing facilities, which must test staff members weekly and can offer only outdoor visits. This is a rapidly evolving situation, and we are constantly assessing what actions are necessary to keep residents and staff safe in these facilities, said Phil Wilson, the acting executive commissioner of Texas Health and Human Services Commission. By following these procedures and rules, facilities can more effectively prevent the spread of COVID-19 and help us achieve our shared goal of reuniting residents with their families and friends. The dramatic increase in the number of COVID-19 cases across Texas in June and July led to another surge in long-term care facilities, with 57% of nursing homes still reporting at least one active case Thursday. Deaths in nursing homes and assisted living facilities account for more than a third of Texas' death toll. Despite the need to protect a high-risk population, families and advocates have been urging the state to allow for limited visitation. Families are just desperate right now to be able to see their loved ones, Alexa Showman, Deputy State Ombudsman in HHSC's Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, said in an interview last week. Kevin Warren, President and CEO of the Texas Healthcare Association, called Thursday's announcement a great step forward. In an interview last week, he said reconnecting families with their loved ones was a priority and that it should be done as quickly as we can. Some Texas lawmakers had been agitating for a policy change for weeks. Last month, State Representative Scott Sanford, R. McKinney, and State Senator Charles Perry, R. Lubbock, along with dozens of other signatories, asked state health officials to loosen restrictions on visitations for patients with memory difficulties and mental disabilities. "We will not stand to let these Texans fall through the cracks," they wrote. City pools to close. Midlanders enjoy a dip in the pool June 11th at Doug Russell Pool. The city's pools will close for the season on Sunday. The photo is of three swimmers in the pool. Tim Fisher, Reporter Telegram. Pools are closing for season. MLK Center to reopen. Sunday is the last day of the season for the city's pools, and the MLK Center gym is reopening, according to a press release from the city's spokeswoman. Doug Russell Pool will be open noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. today, while Washington Family Aquatic Center will be open 1 to 4 p.m. and 5 to 8 p.m. Sunday. Passes are $3 and go on sale at the pool 30 minutes before opening. Passes are good only for the day of purchase. Meanwhile, the MLK Community Center gym workout facility will reopen Monday. Hours of operation will be 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Wednesday and Friday, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday. The facility will be limited to 25% capacity, according to Governor Greg Abbott's order, and masks and gloves are required. For more information, call the center at 685-7355. Tax-free weekend continues through Sunday. School will be starting this month, and that means it's time for back-to-school shopping. The sales tax holiday in Texas continues through Sunday. Items that qualify as tax-free include most clothing and footwear, school supplies, and backpacks. Purchases may be made in-store or online, according to the State Comptroller's Office website. For more information or a complete list of exempt items, go to comptroller.texas.gov. Big Spring Symphony delays season. Big Spring Symphony is delaying the start of its 39th season because of a surge in coronavirus cases, according to an email from the Symphony Association. Current plans are to kick off the season on October 17th with Bohemian Rhapsody, the music of Queen, performed by Jeans and Classics. This concert has been scheduled for April, and tickets purchased before the original date will be honored, according to the email. For more information, go to the symphony's website, bigspringssymphony.org, or Facebook page. Call or text 432-816-5196 or email bigspringssymphonyassociation@gmail.com. Grocery store hours during coronavirus. United Supermarket, 6 a.m. to 11 p.m., 1002 Andrews Highway. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. 3317 North Midland Drive. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Tuesday and Thursday. HEB, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., customers 60 plus. Orders can be called in 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 833-397-0080. Groceries will be delivered by Favor Delivery. For more information, go to newsroom.hdheb.com. Market Street, 6 a.m. to midnight. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. Walmart, 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. 7 to 8 a.m. curbside and delivery pickup. For first responders and customers 60 plus with disabilities or at risk. City updates watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the watering schedule from 2 days a week to 4 days a week. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. The Utilities Department says residents should not overwater the lawn and should watch for puddles or runoff from sprinklers. When it's open, Midland County Public Library, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday, curbside pickup at Downtown Branch, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., Monday through Friday. Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, August 8th, 2020. Death Notices. Jack Raymond Skiles. Jack Raymond Skiles, 89, of Midland, passed away August 5th, 2020. He was born to the late Guy and Vashti Skiles on March 20th, 1931, in Del Rio, Texas. He is survived by his wife, Wilmoth D. Skiles, and 3 children. A memorial service will be held at a later date.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, August 8th, 2020. Medical Professionals Talk School Gatherings by Michael Merlot. Medical Center Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said that while admissions of COVID-19 cases seem to be trending down in the last 2 weeks, she expects an increase in cases as schools reopen. I would think with school starting again, we're going to see a little bit of an increase in caseloads, whether that be in the community or the hospital, she said. Dr. Timothy Benton said he agreed that there is potential for a spike in cases from school opening and said, I don't think that in the long term this is over. I think that in the very, very short term there seems to be a downward trend. 2 weeks from now it could be a different story. As for the current downtrend, Timmons reported that for admissions we're seeing that they are slowly decreasing. For over the weekends, we're only seeing like 1 or 2 admitted versus 2 or 3 a night. She added that while there were 3 admissions of COVID-19 patients Thursday night, the trend has been down. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown added that the numbers at ORMC are down significantly from June and July, and the patients currently in-house aren't quite as sick as they were before, so we are seeing very similar trends. Dr. Timothy Benton said that the hospitals act as a good barometer of the community and shows that the trend seems to be trickling down. Benton added that numbers are on a decline, but as long as the virus exists out there, it can come back. The case numbers may go back up, so I think we have to remain on guard. Medical professionals also spoke on the upcoming flu season, and Timmons said that MCH will not be doing anything differently in preparation. We're focusing on the flu and COVID together, and just that constant PPE conservation, resource management, she said. We're going to be doing the exact same thing that we're doing now, including working on our resources with staffing, respiratory support, those types of things, she said. Brown said that the flu season is when those surge plans will come into play. And Benton spoke on Governor Greg Abbott's press conference and said he hoped that COVID-19 precautions would also help slow the spread of the flu. A Friday MCH press release detailed that out of 1,157 total positive cases, 24 COVID-19 patients are in the hospital, 4 are on the 7th central isolation floor, 10 are on the 8th central isolation floor, 10 are in the critical care unit with 6 of those patients on ventilators, and 28 total tests are pending results. We'll be merging our 7 and 8 central units into one because of that lower volume to just conserve on resources, Timmons said. Of those 24 in-house patients, one is from Siena Nursing and Rehabilitation, one is from Deering Nursing Home, one is from Andrews, one is from Monahans, one is from Stanton, 2 are from Pecos, and 1 from Fort Stockton. Brown said that while ORMC has conducted 2,057 tests, 853 people have tested positive, and 9 tests are pending. She added that 11 patients are in the hospital, 4 of them are on ventilators, and of the in-hospital patients, 1 is from Andrews and 3 are from Big Spring. Neither Ector County Health Department nor county officials have been on the last 2 calls, but Dr. Benton said that for people awaiting test results from the National Guard tests, the initial contact should occur through the National Guard, he said, adding that the health department does eventually receive those numbers. The Ector County Health Department website was updated after 5:30 p.m. Friday and showed 3,531 total positive COVID-19 cases in the county. 2,412 are confirmed positives, 1,119 are probable positives, and 800 are listed as active cases. While 2,675 people have recovered from the virus, 56 Ector County residents have reportedly died from COVID-19-related complications. MCHS announces Panda Cares Center by Sam Waller. Medical Center Health System recognized the financial support of Panda Restaurant Group, which includes Panda Express, Panda Inn, and Hibachi-san, by naming its pediatric playroom the Panda Cares Center of Hope. The move became official today, which is Panda Cares Day. During the virtual fundraising event, the restaurant chain donated 28% of online sales to MCHS for Children's Miracle Network through its Panda Cares philanthropic arm. Panda has contributed $250,000 in donations to MCHS since 2012 and has agreed to raise $770,000 over the next 10 years for Children's Miracle Network at MCHS. It is an incredible contribution, Allison Praden, Vice President of Development at MCH, said. Panda Express has been an incredible Children's Miracle Network partner for years now. We were able to raise $2.9 million for the renovation that was completed in 2017, and this is going to help to improve the pediatric renovation. This provides a better, higher quality level of care for our pediatric patients. Donations collected year-round at local Panda Express locations directly benefit the children treated at MCHS. Funds are used to pay for equipment, research, supplies, charitable care, and a variety of other needs for the pediatric and NICU units. Today's announcement was just the latest step in a years-long project, Praden said. Panda has really stepped up their fundraising and donations. We really wanted to show them a thank you and really help embrace that partnership. This is something we talked to them about. Their locations in Midland and Odessa have both raised nearly $100,000 every year. We really wanted to show our thanks to them and appreciation for everything they do for pediatrics. This is something that has been in the works for several years and is coming to fruition. A special feature of the current project, Praden said, is the donation of books for pediatric patients. Because of our infection control, we can't let patients share books, she said. As soon as they read a book, they take it home with them. Panda Express has donated boxes of books for our pediatric patients for readers of all levels. That's something special that entertains the kids. It's something special that they get to do. They get to take home a book that they got to read while they were here. That's been a huge thing. There will also be a display in the playroom honoring donors, Praden said. We are working on one of our walls. We feature different donors on the walls. There will actually be a Panda Express restaurant feature in our unit. Praden said the facility will benefit patients up to the age of 18. Our playroom actually has a lot of features not only for toddlers and babies, but we also have Xbox and PlayStation up there, she said. We do have those older kids come in, and we have something to entertain them as well. Still, Praden said, the project is never truly complete. We are always trying to improve, especially our pediatric care in this area, she said. We feel like we provide a great level of care, but if we can keep our pediatric patients here, we do everything we can to keep them at home where we can take care of them. There's always more to be done. Quick hits. Overeaters Anonymous. Overeaters Anonymous, a 12-step support group, has scheduled the following Zoom meetings. Sundays, 6 p.m., ID 964-152-377, passcode WE. Mondays, noon, ID 420-773-870, passcode 061284. Wednesdays, 8 a.m., ID 388-141-943, passcode 026193. Meetings are free and open to the public. For more information, call 553-1031 or visit oa.org. Drive-in opening night. Synergy Entertainment, 8250 Highway 191, has scheduled a drive-in opening night featuring National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation at sundown August 14th. Gates open at 8 p.m. Movie starts at sundown, weather permitting. Synergy food and beverages will be available for purchase. Pricing per vehicle. For tickets and rules, visit synergy.com/synergy-drive-in-Odessa. Drive-through food pantries. West Texas Food Bank and their partners conduct drive-through pantries to anyone needing food assistance. Tuesdays and Thursdays, 9 to 11 a.m., at West Texas Food Bank, 1601 West Cliff Drive, Midland. Wednesdays and Fridays, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at West Texas Food Bank, 411 South Pagewood, Odessa. ID is required. Those in need may use the WTFB drive-thru pantry once a month. You may be asked to work with one of the 80-plus partner agencies should you need food more than once a month. Pantry boxes are available while supplies last. Pantry hours are subject to change. The partner list is available at tinyurl.com/Y6BU4UT2. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/YY2C. Local news roundup. Name change. The Ector County ISD Advanced Academics Department has announced that as middle high school students are returning to school this fall, they will notice a name change with some of the district's courses. What used to be called pre-advanced placement or pre-AP courses are now called honors courses. The courses will maintain the same level of rigor and the same high expectation and the same weighted grade point average, as they are designed to challenge students and prepare them for high school AP courses, a news release said. Early Ed Centers set registration. Pre-kindergarten in-person registration for Carver and Lamar Early Education Centers is from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. Carver Early Education Center, 600 College Avenue, and Lamar Early Education Center, 501 Letty Lee Avenue. Both schools offer full-day pre-kindergarten, face-to-face, or virtual instruction. You must register even if you choose virtual instruction. Parents are asked to come to registration with the following documents: proof of address, proof of income, parent identification, child's birth certificate, child's social security card, child's shot record. You do not need to attend this registration if you have already registered your child. Please remain in your car until staff provides instructions. Masks are required. Scholarship recipients to sign commitment to teach in ECISD. The Education Foundation of Odessa will be awarding 4 UT Permian Basin students scholarships at 1 p.m. Monday via a Facebook Live event. As part of the scholarship, the students have committed to teach at Ector County ISD for at least 2 years after they graduate. Ector County ISD is committed to investing in talent. One of the best ways to begin this process is by investing in current or former students who want to join our team, Executive Director of Talent Development for ECISD, Ashley Osborne, said in a news release. The Education Foundation Scholarship is a generous reminder that our community is also committed to investing in ECISD. We are excited that as a result of the scholarship, 4 of our former students will be able to join us as we make a positive impact on students and ultimately our community. We treasure the partnership with the Education Foundation and appreciate the continued support. The scholarship covers the full cost of tuition, fees, books, and a meal plan. Graduates of Ector County High Schools who maintain a 3.0 cumulative GPA on a 4.0 scale and plan on a degree and career in teaching are eligible to apply for the scholarship. To adhere to recommended social distancing rules and for the safety of everyone, this event will be private, but we hope that you will join us live on the ECISD Facebook page and help share this positive news with the Odessa community. The four students who have received the Education Foundation of Odessa Scholarship at UTPB are Arlene Harris, a Permian High School graduate, Daniela Garcia, a Permian graduate, Sophia Rutledge, an OC Techs graduate, and Caitlin Miller, a PHS graduate. Obituaries and death notices for Saturday, August 8th. Joseph Parker. Gordon. Joseph Newton Parker passed away peacefully in his sleep after a brief illness at Texas Health Harris in Fort Worth, August 5th. Joe was born in Ranger to T.N. Parker and Faye June McQuarrie Parker. He was preceded in death by his parents, his stepdad Jim McKee, brother Johnny Parker, stepson Brad Green, brother-in-law Mike Woods, and nephew T.C. Rich. He is survived by his siblings, Sue and Larry Jackson, Deanna and Mike Hamilton, Pam and Blake Beyer, Mary and Dennis Hamilton, Tommy Parker Woods, his stepdaughter Lisa Lima, several nieces, nephews, great-nieces, great-nephews, great-great-nieces and nephews, and many aunts, uncles, and cousins. Per Joe's request, he will be cremated and there will be no services. Donations may be made to the charity of your choice. Online condolences may be left at www.edwards-funeral-homes.com. Romaldo Hill Jr. Romaldo Hill Jr. of Odessa was born August 3, 1959, and passed away August 3, 2020. He was married to his wife, Velma, in 2007. He is preceded in death by his parents, Romaldo and Elena Hill, two brothers, Reynaldo Hill and Rosario Hill. Romaldo is survived by his son, Ramon Hill, and wife, Jessie, daughter, Monica Hill, brother, Guillermo Hill, and wife, Gloria, sisters, Mary Ortega and husband, Jesse Ortega, Lydia Cruz, and many loving nieces, nephews, cousins, and friends. Ronald Dean Ronnie Key. Ronnie Key, 76, of Odessa, passed away Monday, August 3rd at his residence. He was born February 22nd, 1944, in Llano, to the late Agnes Perry and Wilton Key. He married Carol Ann Hunter in 1969 in Odessa. Ron is survived by his wife, Carol, sons Shane Key of Lubbock, Brent Key of Odessa, and Joshua Key of Joliet, Illinois, and one granddaughter, McKenna. He is preceded in death by his parents, Wilton and Agnes Key, and a daughter-in-law, Nancy Key. Visitation was held Friday, August 7th at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home, and funeral services were held at Redeemer Lutheran Church Saturday, August 8th. Graveside services will be Monday, August 10th at 10 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Death notices. Malachi Andrew Zane Cuda Mitchell. Cuda Mitchell, 20, died Thursday, August 6th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Ina Waddle. Ina Waddle, 85, of Odessa, died Tuesday, August 4th. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, August 10th at Central Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens, with Pastor Vonnie Taylor officiating. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.